From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. When Lindsay Boylan, a former advisor to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, decided to run for Congress, challenging incumbent Democrat Gerald Nadler, she received a threatening letter from a prominent party donor and activist. The donor said, "I am totally behind Nadler," and added, "You may have seriously impaired any realistic chance to run for the other offices you were considering." Establishment Democrats were stunned last year when longtime incumbents Joe Crowley in New York and Mike Capuano in Massachusetts were toppled by first-time primary challengers Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ayanna Pressley. Now the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, or DCCC, has instituted new rules for vendors and consultants, barring them from working on primary campaigns against Democratic incumbents. Lindsay Boylan now joins me. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
So you're planning on running for Congress in New York's 10th District, which happens to be represented currently by Gerald Nadler, who is a very prominent Democrat, who's in the news right now as chair of the House Judiciary Committee, and you know, who's one of the people who is attempting to hold President Trump accountable. Tell me first a little bit about this letter that you received. You haven't revealed who sent it to you, but if you can give us a little bit more context about it.
Sure. Well, you know, I didn't reveal who sent it because I don't think it's important. I think it's much more representative of the many barriers that any candidate would face if they decide to challenge the very entrenched Democrats and challenge the hierarchy of how things work. And really what I wanted to do was shed a light on really making it clear what happens to candidates who try to buck the system. And if I talk about it with the relative experience that I've had, I think it will be better for everyone who's trying to challenge the system because they believe that we're not being represented as well as we could be. The note I received was from someone who I have a lot of respect for and I'd met on a few occasions, a very powerful person that's a donor in the Democratic Party. And, you know, smart people can disagree, and I think that that's a really important part of democracy. So if this person had simply said, you know, I think I'm going to be sticking with Nadler, or, you know, chose to just move on with his ambitions around who he wants to support, that would be fine. But the note was sent really to try and persuade me in a very threatening way to do something else. And that's what I take exception to. This is politics. The stakes are very high because what we're talking about is affecting people's lives, and the decisions are made, the kind of funding that is dedicated to issues that affects people's lives every day. So I'm under no, I have no sense that this is not a really important process to run through, but the electoral process and the campaign process should be a process. And I think underpinning all of the pushback that I've received is this idea that someone is owed or the office belongs to someone. And that's just not right. We all know that. And I'm really excited to take on this journey, particularly because in spite of the DCCC ruling, there are a lot of people who believe in the idea of new leadership, believe in new energy, believe in new approach and tactics to solving some of the problems that really challenge us every day, that affect families and lives every day. And so, you know, my interest in contributing to that original article and for talking about it with you today is sort of twofold. You know, it's completely within the rights of the DCCC to act as they want to. But I think anyone who's a challenger and anyone who believes in a vigorous democracy and believes in what they're trying to achieve by running is going to highlight at every moment the kinds of decisions people and organizations like the DCCC are making. Or when a challenger who has a point of view and is really driven by making things better experiences this sort of wall, this sort of fear tactic, I think we should talk about it because you know, the DCCC and entrenched incumbents can act as they want to, as long as it's within the boundaries of the law, but they're going to know the true cost of doing that. And the true cost of doing that is making voters aware of the way that they're acting in order to stay in power. Mm. And, you know, one thing, you know, we always take so much from our parents, but at every job I've ever had, I'm reminded of what my dad said, that, you know, you have to get there in a way that you're proud of, because if at the end of the day you succeed and you've sort of bent your own moral compass, it's not you getting there. And I want everyone to know, including the DCCC and including entrenched incumbents, that I'm going to keep talking about this in as much as it's an important factor in the campaign process. And I'm also going to keep talking about it because, you know, at least from my perspective, I've been very lucky. I have a great family that's able to support me. I have all these wonderful career opportunities in New York. I've worked for Governor Cuomo. I've learned a tremendous amount, had so many opportunities to lead. And if I am being, if I'm being approached in this manner by people who want to maintain the status quo, I just shudder at thinking what happens to other women, people like my mother, people like my grandmother, people like, well, anyone who hasn't had the same opportunities. And it really increases my resolve to do this. And we're going to keep talking about it.
Let's talk about specifically what it was that the DCCC did in March. They announced on their website for vendors, standards for DCCC political vendors. And they basically required them to sign a loyalty pledge saying, I understand that the core mission of the DCCC is electing House Democrats, which includes support and protecting incumbents. To that end, the DCCC will not conduct business with nor recommend to any of its targeted campaigns any consultant that works with an opponent of a sitting member of the House Democratic Caucus. I mean, this is clearly in response to the successful primary challenges last year in New York. You saw, of course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and in Massachusetts, Ayanna Pressley. And those were just two that succeeded. There were plenty of others that mounted strong challenges that, you know, might have that did narrowly fail. And there are others like you who in this next round are challenging. So the DCCC is clearly not happy about this. What sort of response has there been within the party? What sort of conversations are happening about the DCCC's step that it has taken? I understand there was some effort to try to dissuade them from doing this.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because, you know, I'm very supportive of particularly women in leadership, which is another reason why I'm so interested in a lot of the programs that you put on. And so I went to this DCCC women's luncheon, and it was just a few days after they made the decision. And they've received a lot of pushback from sort of progressive parts of the party, people who you just described, people like Ayanna Pressley, people like AOC, people like Ro Khanna, really, you know, really unique leaders who are doing a tremendous job in their own ways to advocate for their districts, for the people in their districts. And interestingly enough, one thing that I don't think is really making across, but is to me the most obvious problem with this new policy, is that Sherry Bustos says that it's really to protect.
She's the chair of the DCCC.
Yes, she's the chair of the DCCC, and she says that this whole policy is really to protect the majority. You know, that's sort of the first line of defense of this policy. But the three districts that have Democrats in office that I can think of offhand, where they've beat incumbents from the Democratic Party, all come from extremely liberal districts. So the three cases, Ayanna Pressley, AOC, and Ro Khanna, they're all from very Cook Democratic Republican sway or range calls, you know, very Democratic, heavy D+ districts. So there's virtually no fear that anyone in these districts is going to convert a nasty primary race into a Republican win. Very similarly, my district, which is Upper West Side of Manhattan, all the way down through Wall Street, and Borough Park and Industry City and parts of Red Hook in Brooklyn, is a heavily Democratic district. So a primary challenge in this district is not going to produce a Republican member of Congress because you debate the issues. And I think what a lot of people are really asking for that I talk to, everyday Democrats, maybe not the senior leaders who've spent their years, fighting through the hierarchy to get their turn where they are now, but the majority of people I talk to want genuine races. They want their leaders to be challenged in such a way that they're pushed to advocate as best they can. They're working as hard as they can to make change, affect change every day on the issues that matter to the communities that they serve. And a policy, which is what this is, that prevents people from challenging the party is not going to produce good ends for Democrats or good ends for the country. And I think one of the most interesting sort of pushbacks that you see that maybe you're referencing too is college Democrats, many individual chapters across the country, I think now it's over 50, have signed on, against this new policy, the DCCC policy. And the college Democrats are the future of the party. These are young leaders from all different campuses on college campuses that one day will be the Speaker of the House, hopefully, that one day will be the governor of New York. And if they are so turned off by what their party leadership is doing, at least on the House side, how does that bode for their engagement, their sense of opportunity within the party? I think it's a really bad sign.
And also there's an effort labeled DCCCblacklist.com, where a number of organizations, including Justice Democrats, who put on the AOC campaign, Indivisible, and other progressive organizations have basically called on vendors to sign the blacklist. They're appropriating that term, owning it, and saying that vendors can themselves choose to work with campaigns directly and stand up to the DCCC. Now, when you received this letter urging you not to run and basically threatening that you would be impairing your future political prospects by daring to challenge Nadler, what was your response to that? Did you react in fear for a bit and then change your mind? I mean, how did it impact you and how did it motivate you to stay the course?
It was pretty immediate. I mean, if you look at the exchange, I responded pretty quickly. There are a few things I like more than a worthwhile fight where what you're trying to do is make change. And when I received that email, it was literal confirmation that the system we have is not set up to better the country, is not set up to help people, to truly hit at the issues that matter. It's first and foremost set up to keep people in power. And I think this is a perfect time to be having that conversation. And when I received that, honestly, on a personal level, my first reaction was, oh, he doesn't know me at all. Because if he knew me, he knew that this kind of tactic would only motivate me more. So honestly, I knew that I was going to file very soon thereafter. And that was a huge motivator for me. And I also want to say for people who are thinking of running, particularly women and more diverse leaders, you can find your people. You can find people to support you. You can find people to fund you. You can find people who believe in your message. And your bravery will actually mean more than whatever kind of faux power tactic that the DCCC or anyone else is trying to scare you with. I have a great team. It is composed of everyone from, four other moms with 8 kids between us. It's composed of friends and colleagues from every career I've had. My 5-year-old daughter is my honorary campaign manager, and my parents are my treasurer and assistant treasurer, and my husband is helping along the way. So I just want to say that people will want to help you if you are driven by the right things, which is the point of politics is to improve people's lives and to make life better for more people. So you will find a way to get around this.
A lot of people are discouraged by the idea that one requires tremendous amounts of money to run. It reaffirms the sense that politics is for the already wealthy, the already privileged. And we have so many districts that, you know, white males are just overrepresented in Congress. We have so many districts where that, as you said, are getting more and more diverse, that, you know, that have representatives that are not demographically representative of the districts that they have been elected by. And we also know that running a campaign can be a tremendous amount of hard work, even when one does have a well-funded infrastructure. So I'm assuming that you're going to be finding out in the next few months just what sort of challenge that is. And it's unfortunate because the DCCC, which is supposed to be supporting candidates like you, may not now, given their new position.
Yeah, you know, one of the most unfortunate things I would say is I've had three sort of casualties, so to speak, on the team. You know, people who've had to opt not to participate or help. Two on the professional side, you know, consultants of various types who said in so many words that this will be bad for my career. And that's sad. I didn't get to work with them. And I think it hurts both of us in a lot of ways. But you know, I'm going to continue the fight, and I've actually found more creative ways to get that help. But the one thing I do want to highlight is there was a young woman who's very talented, who's senior in the College Democrats, and she had wanted to come work with me. We have a lot of overlap in terms of our interest and what we're hoping to achieve in politics. She's a young woman who I think is going to be a future leader in the party, and she had agreed to come work with me in you know, handshake terms, but because of this policy, she was very worried that her career would be affected and she had to opt out. No, I don't fault her at all. I fault the DCCC, and I fault people who are more concerned with protecting themselves than supporting the future of the Democratic Party. And I highlight her because it's not all about me. It's not all about the people who are running. They're trying to hurt the people who are running, but they're doing it by getting at the people who are going to work on campaigns. And this woman is going to be part of the future of the Democratic Party. I'm certain of it. I have a lot of faith in her. And the first lesson she's learning about her party after college is that they are afraid of new people, new voices, and challenges. And that is not the kind of Democratic Party that we should be creating for the future. We should be doing better, much better.
And we have seen just in the past few months with some of these newly elected women in Congress, you know, we had a record-breaking number of new women elected to Congress. And, you know, among them, the two that I'd mentioned who last year ousted longtime Democrats have been among the most brave members of Congress, the most outspoken members of Congress, and appear to at least be representing their district's interests most honestly, because they haven't come from those entrenched political classes.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, they're so impressive. They're inspiring. Yeah. I don't think we all have to agree on every issue to know that when I get elected, I'm really excited to work with a lot of these fantastic, especially women. And there are a lot of them who are doing really interesting things. You mentioned two that I'm very impressed by. I think it'll be a lot of fun. And I think the future is women and more diverse leaders getting in the game. And I think when you put people through the kind of tests that you put them through, and that you're putting, that the DCCC and the Democratic Party is putting us through, whether they like it or not, they're going to get stronger leaders who are more assured of themselves and more sure that they can do it on their own, and they don't need the support of the broader infrastructure if it's one that isn't going to allow them to advocate effectively for the people in their district and make meaningful change. And that's another lesson I'm learning.
Do you hope that there are going to be just as many, if not more, primary challengers to Democratic incumbents this time round compared to the last midterm elections, the last congressional elections?
Absolutely. I think it's good for democracy. I don't only hope for myself, because I'd like to be joined in this experience, and it's a fun one. But that's what makes democracy. And if you want things to work better, it requires an exchange of ideas. Sometimes that's between competitors. And I'm just speaking in my district alone. I mean, you talked about sort of representation from every level, from city council to Congress, from my mayor to my governor to my community board. Every single leader mentioned is a white male. And, you know, I think there's a lot of great leadership happening, but there's no question that the systems that keep people out of office and dissuade them and threaten them from running is intimately connected to a lack of diversity and a lack of diverse voices at every level. And this is, I live in Manhattan. I live in the heart of, you know, New York. We like to think of ourselves as the center of the universe, but, you know, it's a place of challenge. It's a place where, you know, business and economy and culture and technology and everything combines, where people come from all over the world and are challenged to make it here. How can we have a system that purely keeps incumbents in office operating right here in the center of all that? And I'm not going to let that win. And I think it's going to be great when we have more people speaking up for the issues they believe in, speaking up for the future that they want for their family, for their kids, like I want for my daughter, frankly, like I want for my mother. I mean, that's the kind of change that's how quickly we need change. And I think it's really exciting. Of course, it makes it a tougher challenge. I'm not saying every day is a walk in the park, but I wouldn't trade it. This is exactly where I need to be at this moment, what I need to be doing. And I've never been prouder to have my daughter see what I'm doing. And I've had a lot of great jobs.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Lindsay, for joining us today. And I wish you the best of luck in your efforts.
Thank you so much. I look forward to tuning in for your show in the future. So thank you very much.
My guest has been Lindsay Boylan. She's a former advisor to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, and she's a candidate running for Congress in New York's 10th District, mounting a primary challenge to incumbent Representative Gerald Nadler. We've been discussing how the DCCC and others are attempting to thwart primary challengers to party incumbents. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.